Eddie was examining the snake. Unlike the bear, it appeared to be a totally artificial construction, a thing of metal, circuits, and yards, or maybe miles, of gossamer-thin wire. Yet he could see flecks of rust, not just on the surface of the half-snake he still held, but in its guts as well. And there was a patch of wetness, where either oil had leaked out or water had seeped in. This moisture had rotted away some of the wires, and a greenish stuff that looked like moss had grown over several of the thumbnail-sized circuit boards. Eddie turned the snake over. A steel plate proclaimed it to be the work of North Central Positronics Limited. There was a serial number, but no name. Probably too unimportant to name, he thought. Just a sophisticated mechanical roto-rooter designed to give old Brer Bear an enema every once in a while, keep him regular, or something equally disgusting. He dropped the snake and wiped his hands on his pants. Roland had picked up the tractor gadget. He yanked at one of the treads. It came off easily, showering a cloud of rust down between his boots. He tossed it aside. Everything in the world is either coming to rest or falling to pieces, he said flatly. At the same time, the forces which interlock and give the world its coherence, in time and size as well as in space, are weakening. We knew that even as children, but we had no idea what the time of the end would be like. How could we? Yet now I am living in those times, and I don't believe they affect my world alone. They affect yours, Eddie and Susanna. They may affect a billion others. The beams are breaking down. I don't know if that's a cause or only another symptom, but I know it's true. Come, draw close. Listen. As Eddie approached the metal box with its alternating diagonal slashes of yellow and black, a strong and unpleasant memory seized him. For the first time in years, he found himself thinking of a crumbling Victorian wreck in Dutch Hill, about a mile away from the neighborhood where he and Henry had grown up. This wreck, which was known as the Mansion to the neighborhood kids, occupied a plot of weedy, untended lawn on Reinhold Street. Eddie guessed that practically all the kids in the borough had heard spooky stories about the mansion. The house stood slumped beneath its steep roof, seeming to glare at passers-by from the deep shadows thrown by its eaves. The windows were gone, of course. Kids can throw rocks through windows without getting too close to a place. But it had not been spray-painted, and it had not become a make-out spot or a shooting gallery. Oddest of all was the simple fact of its continued existence. No one had set it on fire to collect the insurance or just to see it burn. The kids said it was haunted, of course, and as Eddie stood on the sidewalk with Henry one day, looking at it, they had made the pilgrimage specifically to see this object of fabulous rumor. Although Henry had told their mother they were only going for Hoodsy Rockets at Dahlberg's with some of his friends, it had seemed that it really might be haunted. Hadn't he felt some strong and unfriendly force seeping from that old Victorian shadowy windows that seemed to look at him with the fixed stare of a dangerous lunatic? Hadn't he felt some subtle wind stirring the hairs on his arms and the back of his neck? Hadn't he had the clear intuition that if he stepped inside that place, the door would slam and lock behind him, and the walls would begin to close in, grinding the bones of dead mice to powder, wanting to crush his bones the same way? Haunting. Haunted. He felt that same old sense of mystery and danger now as he approached the metal box. Goose flesh began to ripple up his legs and down his arms. The hair on the back of his neck bushed out and became rough, overlapping hackles. He felt that same subtle wind blowing past him, although the leaves on the trees which ringed the clearing were perfectly still. Yet he walked toward the door anyway, for that was what it was, of course, another door, although this one was locked and always would be against the likes of him, not stopping until his ear was pressed against it. It was as if he had dropped a tab of really strong acid half an hour ago, and it was just beginning to come on heavy. Strange colors flowed across the darkness behind his eyeballs. He seemed to hear voices murmuring up to him from long hallways like stone throats, halls which were lit with guttering electric torches. Once these flambeaux of the modern age had thrown a bright glare across everything, but now they were only sullen cores of blue light. He sensed emptiness, desertion, desolation, death.